I want to get involved now in talking a little bit about some of the principles on the other side who are trying to shore up their nations against this collapse, more principally the Chinese and the Russians. We've seen Russia over the last 2 years taking very seriously the idea of being net purchasers of gold bullion. And over the last, especially the last 18 months, we've seen their reserves of gold swell by 200 or 300% over what they had. It's been a buying frenzy for them on using their oil revenues. Now, the Chinese, on the other hand, have done it a little differently. What they've done is taken the cash that they had available, aside from buying treasuries to keep their relationship with America alive, they've been using their extra cash to build an internal infrastructure that will support internal demand so that when the rest of the world craps out, they just shut their borders and they can run off of their own internal demand. In other words, they can micromanage their own internal economy so that the Chinese, I mean, look, 70% of China is still rural and they still don't have washing machines, dryers, and the rest of it. So these people can actually create internal demand that'll go out into the next 3, 4, 5 decades. They don't have to worry about export markets as much as the rest of us, because basically the internal demand is going to support their idea, is it not?
That's correct, Al. The two interesting players in the world stage have been making very different types of moves, but both of them protectionist, self-protectionist. One is Russia. Yes, they've been buying gold and gold mines, Daryl. They've been also buying up gold mines, which have got special tax incentives from the Russian government, so these oligarchs in Russia, if they buy gold, don't have any tax to pay on the profits, and if they buy gold mines. So Putin's incentivized that. He's also, one thing that that Putin's been doing in common with the Chinese is they've been doing straightforward international barter swaps, something which the World Trade Organization attempted to get rid of and make unlawful in international business law,
Explain what that is, because we've been talking about swaps and you know, all this other stuff. It's not the kind of swap of a financial swap. This is like we've got 100,000 barrels of oil for your economy if you'll supply us with bauxite, or you'll supply us with nitrites for our fertilizers or whatever. And they've been going commodity for commodity swaps at fair market. Yes.
That's right, Dal. This is nothing to do with financial derivatives. This is the good old-fashioned barter, where I'll swap you 3 chickens for a goat or something. In this particular instance, a lot of this has been around the Middle East, Afghanistan, and especially Iran area, where China and Iran and Russia and Iran have formed some kind of a strategic alliance. And they've done all this kind of business, swapping assets for assets. In this instance, Iranian oil and Iranian gas has been swapped for Chinese submarines and Chinese missiles. And with Russia has been able to pipe all the way through Iran to loading places on the south coast of Iran, on the Indian Ocean there. So they've built these pipelines which are under Iranian protection for the Russian delivery of their goods. And for that they received MiGs and surface-to-air missile systems, which is slightly more sophisticated than the Patriot system. So weapons has been on one side of it, but all been assets, no cash. And also the pistachio production of Iran has now found its way into China too, because it's the world's number one pistachio producer. In fact, pistachios originated from Iran. They were the first country in the world to have in it a pistachio tree, amazingly enough. It can all be traced back there. And something like 60 to 70% of Iranian pistachio production is now finding its way into China, again as part of a swap and not a cash payment.
Well, now, where I see this going is that even in local areas where people are listening to this broadcast, whether it be in the Middle East or South Africa or in America, as this thing hots up and people's finances become so pressured that their money's not going to the end of the month, it's going to become necessary for them to get involved in even local swaps of their own, bartering systems. I can't see people going forward with the present structure. The structure itself, as it starts unwinding and people lose their jobs and whatnot, we're not in the 1930s anymore, Muhammad, where still a full 60% of the American and Western European public lived on farms. We're living where 85% live in big cities where they have no ability to produce food for themselves. And if the farmers can't get paid with real assets and money, how the heck are these city dwellers going to get food?
Well, there are, you know, if the social infrastructure breaks down in the sense of the food delivery system, and as you pointed out, that involves a lot of just-in-time type stuff, and the distribution of population, if that falls apart, I mean, it's just impossible to even contemplate, to be honest, Darren. It's so awful as a thought if that started happening. What's definitely going to happen, which could lead to that scenario, is, as you've rightly pointed out, the devaluing of money. One of the things that it says in that fraudulent document, the protocols, is that they are going to make money practically worthless, apart from people holding enormous sums of it. The way that they will do that is by inflating the money supply, which is, of course, the extra $150 billion just been announced, that's causing confidence to collapse. I would imagine that two or three more announcements like that, and there won't be a value on the dollar. It'll be, like you say, there are professionals out there who are suspecting below 60, heading towards 50 on the basket of currencies. Not impossible with such ridiculous conduct by the Fed and the U.S. government on managing its economy.
Well, you know, the dollar took a dead cat bounce today. And if you guys know the French connection, a dead cat bounce is that the people in the financial world say that, you know, even a cat will bounce if you throw it hard enough on the pavement. and that's what the economy is doing right now. And the dollar actually jumped almost to 77 from 75.60 on that basket. That's a temporary rise in the money. I have a suspicion that within 3 weeks you'll be seeing 70 or even lower tested, and I also have a great suspicion that you will see 1,000 broken on the value of gold in the next 2 or 3 weeks, and possibly higher. It could be as high as 1,100 or 1,200. I see gold running up to about 1,600 within by March, end of March, I see. Now, these are just guesses on my part based upon experience and following this nightmare. But, we're at a point now, Muhammad, where we have to start blaming somebody in real terms, the people. Now, we talked privately the other day about the Jewish agency, and rarely has anybody ever brought that name up. And what you need to understand, listeners, is that the Jewish Agency is the umbrella group that took over after the Basel meeting with Herzl back in the beginning of the last century, around 1904, 1905. So much bad press about this conspiracy the Jews were formulating came out, that their main organizations were getting such bad press that they reinvented themselves and changed their name. And they became the Jewish Agency, and they have to this day, for the last century or more, been in charge of the movements in Zionism worldwide.
Absolutely.
So you need to check about this agency and who runs it in your local country, because the Jewish Agency exists in every major nation in the world. Am I correct?
That's completely correct, Daryl, and they are the umbrella organization that all the other organizations which form have to get approval from. Otherwise, you're seen as ostracized and not part of the flow, shall we say. So you, if you form any form of, you know, League of American Jews against Iran or something, any organization that you form, you actually have to take permission from them. And then once you've got that permission, you're allowed to go seeking funds from the community, and you get the blessing, and everybody supports you.
The New Torah Card has been against the Jewish Agency from the beginning of the last century as one of the main arms of this criminal conspiracy that they saw happening. But again, even the New Torah Card rabbis won't go full tilt on some of the fraud we've all experienced in the last century, especially some of the stuff that came out of World War II. Even they won't tell the full story, and the fact that they still adhere to the Talmud frightens me about that group.
Well, they have their own sets of belief, and the thing that's different, obviously, about Netare Carter is that they take as their source of law the Torah, the laws of Moses. So as far as they're concerned, the Talmud is only exegesis. It's only an explanatory commentary of what's already there. They're not Talmudists in that they have abandoned the Torah laws. And that's a fundamental difference. What does that mean in interpretation? Very important. Where we read in the Old Testament the references to neighbor, in the Talmud, the Talmudists say that neighbor can only be a Jew and does not include Gentiles. And, of course, this is something that Jesus, peace be upon him, and his mother, was fighting the Jews of the day, the rabbis of the day, about with the Good Samaritan story, where he's saying, you know, you're calling yourselves righteous, but you'll walk past people. Whereas this Samaritan won't. He'll actually stop and help. So you're not righteous until you treat everybody as your neighbor, and everybody, you know, equally in the sense of children of Adam. So this is a big difference. The Netare Carter state that when it says in the Torah that Jews are not allowed to kill, harm, or demean another people, it means all people. Whereas the Talmudists will say, oh, this only means Jews, and we are allowed to kill, harm, or demean Gentiles. So actually, when you look at the Netare Carter, although they still use the Talmud, they use that as a reference point to the Torah, and they don't actually look only at the Talmud. It's when people abandon the Torah and move away from, you know, the laws of Moses. Thou shalt not kill, to a Talmudist, means thou shalt not kill a Jew.
Whereas everybody else is fair game.
Yeah, but to the Netare Carter, it means thou shalt not kill, full stop, to anybody. That to slaying the life of any human being is not permitted. So that's the fundamental difference there. Coming back to what you said about the Jewish Agency, the Netare Carter are frightened of the Jewish Agency because the Jewish Agency has ordered the murder of their rabbis for the last 90 years, many of them. When a rabbi dies from among the Netare Carter, when they're murdered, it is almost always at the behest of somebody within the controlling parts of the Jewish Agency.
Well, if people do a search, we're going to ask the webmaster to put up a link to this information about the Jewish Agency. There are names there. There are people there. You can look at the governing bodies of each area. You will not see the real movers and shakers because the top 300 or 400 controllers of the planet within World Zionism are not listed on their front pages. This is the working group. This is the level of boots on the ground for the criminals. And they've actually have codified their criminal activity into a structure that can be researched. Now, the chief executives of this criminal network don't put their names on the front page. The Oppenheimers don't, and the Rothschilds, of course, don't, and the Levies, and the Lord Goldsmiths, and the rest of these people—they're off the—they're off balance sheet, if you will. They're not being listed. However, the real nuts and bolts guys that are doing the criminal acts out there in society are listed. And so, when you want to put the stop to what these people are doing, you can stop them at the level of the Jewish Agency. Am I correct?
Yep. I'll give you a very good story on the Jewish Agency, which is published by the Netarei Carter, and it resulted in one of their rabbis being murdered. His name was Rabbi Michael Bar Weissmandel, and what happened was that he, during the Second World War, had done a deal with the Nazis for the transfer of Jews from Jewish German Jewish ghettos to New York. And he agreed a price per Jew with the Nazis in control that, that would have allowed them to move. The Netarei Carter, as I remember, said that he'd broken a deal for something like 17,000 of them to leave to New York. And they approached the head of the Jewish Agency's rescue committee. So the Jewish Agency in the Second World War had a rescue committee. The head of that rescue committee was a man called Isaac Greenbaum, or Yitzhak Grunbaum, depending on whether you take the Israeli or anglicized spelling. Now, Isaac Grunbaum said to Rabbi Michael Bar Weissmandel, he said, if you are asking me for money to send Jews to a country other than Palestine, the answer is no. I repeat, no. Another interesting thing about Isaac Grunbaum, by the way, Darrell, was actually company secretary of IG Farben during the Second World War, the company that manufactured Zyklon B. He was actually listed down as the company secretary. And he had refused money that the Netarei Carter state would have taken more than 17,000 Netarei Carter Jews to New York in the Second World War. He turned them flat down for money, and they were shipped off.
Well, now, Zyklon B, everybody needs to remember, was not a killing gas, but rather a delousing gas, because they knew that there would be great movements of people around Europe due to the Nazi and Zionist conspiracy, so that there would be great need to make sure that epidemics didn't break out across Europe and the world during these great peregrinations of these peoples, and that Zyklon B would be a great investment. What better thing to invest in than having to delouse people if you're going to make everybody move?
Well, I would say, Darrell, that let's work on the basis that 6 million Jews were gassed. On the basis that they were gassed with Zyklon B, the man who was company secretary at the board level was the head of the Jewish Agency's rescue committee.
Yep. Yep. You don't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen. And, I, Mohammed, you know my position over here in France, being that, I could get ferrisoned in about 2 seconds over here if I even get involved in talking about Holocaust issues.
Mm.
But
we're not going to buy anything. We've just pointed out that the company that manufactured the pellets that produced the gas that killed 6 million Jews, the company secretary at the board level, was the head of the Jewish Agency's rescue committee. That is a cast iron solid fact. You can go and look at the reports of IG Farben and who were the board members, and you will find Isaac Greenbaum, Yitzhak Grunbaum. This stuff is published by the Netarei Carter.
Well, you know, what we're seeing now, Mohammed, is not very far from what we talked about at the end of November into early December. And my prognosis for the world and my diagnosis of the problem are turning out to be accurate along with yours. And I said that you would see serious things happening January and into February. And I said by the end of February, you are not going to recognize the financial landscape anywhere in the world. And I have to say now that I am not wrong about that. I wasn't wrong when I said it in at the time. And our analysis about this stuff has been spot on. Now, I'm going to go further here and say by March, and it might even happen in their criminal perim period when they're doing their nonsensical biblical connections to this crazy conspiracy, we'll probably see them try to get a war started with the Iranians by this next perim. Am I correct?
Well, it's certainly, you know, the usual suspects are so keen for a war with Iran. Well, you can't help but wonder what on earth it's all about, Darrell. That side of it, I just don't understand the rationale behind wanting to go out there and start slaughtering men, women, and children who've got nothing to do with anybody or anything. That just confuses me to pieces.
It does me too, and I don't get it either. But that was one of the problems I had early on in understanding this conspiracy, because at every time I uncovered something, I thought to myself, this can't be. It's too heinous, too sick, too bizarre. But as I've come to understand what these people have already done in history through reading the books on the website and others, and I've read probably 60 or 70 different major books and publications about the crimes they've committed, I'm convinced now that there is no crime too disgusting and too bizarre for these people to commit. None.
They're capable of anything, Dal, simply because of this Talmudic approach to existence, whereby they are the human beings and everybody else a half-cattle and they don't have human soul. From their perspective, the slaughters in Armenia or Russia or wherever they've been operating in the world are just like, you know, killing cattle. They shoot horses, don't they? It's just that kind of thing. It's very, very tragic. So I think, yeah, they are trying to beat the war, the drum for war in Iran. Whether they'll get it or not remains to be seen. They're pushing hard. I think their focus is going to be on the money at the moment. These guys are worried about how much money they're actually losing, and because, you know, N.M. Rothschild, at the end of the day, and other such institutions are contractual parties to instruments, bets, really, financial instruments, but as far as we understand them, Dal, bets that they've lost. And I think that you were quoting to me a man who said that, you know, all of this is going to end up with probably one of the biggest exercises in litigation in the history of the world.
But sadly, the litigation that would come out of this would be in the hands of the Jews themselves, because most Zionist Jews working in legal structures both in Britain, America, France, and elsewhere, they're principally being held. Judgeships and legal stuff are in the hands of Zionists.
Yeah,
they're gonna make their own solution for their own control. And here's the worst part of it: they're gonna get the gullible nincompoop non-Jew Zionist Jew people out in the world to go out and do their jackbooted nastiness to the public. In the name of public order. And they're going to be in the background saying, you know, you got to go after this group, you got to go after these people. And simple fact of the matter is the real people that the police departments need to be informed about are the Zionist Jews that have done this. And I'm, you know, I don't know how to scream it loud enough that the people that are going to do the actual hurting of public, you know, look, our police departments are not controlled by Zionists at the lowest level. Knocking on your door, 99.9% of the time you're not going to be facing someone from the Zionist camp when he comes to your house. But for some strange reason, we can't get the truth into the minds of these people carrying out the actions. And they're going to put on their black masks and their, you know, their private army crap, and they're going to go out like they did in New Orleans. And they're going to beat up on the public, and we've got to stop that. Now, how do we stop it? The best way I can see is to scream it as loud as we can from every place we can do it and tell these people to start doing their due diligence to find out who's making and giving and writing these orders, Mohammed.
Mm. Well, I think that the best endeavors have been made by French Connection to get the message over, to present facts. By looking at the facts, and this is an interesting thing, the old proof of the pudding is in the eating, by the information which is available and the knowledge which is available through the French Connection, you and I made interpretations into the future, is the best way of describing it, based on the analysis of facts on the ground as we see them, what the real facts are. Had our facts on the ground been wrong, Darryl, then our interpretation into the future, or interpolation into the future, would have been wrong. The irony is, for everybody listening out there, the predicted facts were right, which means, and not on one occasion, on more than one occasion, and on, you know, several diverse issues. This means that we have to be dealing with the facts here in order to have made those kinds of predictions, because they're linear. Those are linear predictions. Those are, hey, if this is going on here, then that will happen there. It's not actually rocket science. It's just that we're dealing with the real facts. And when you have the real facts, you can see where it's really going to go. So the information coming out from the French Connection is as loud as it can be. It's as accurate as it can be. And we're even demonstrating the accuracy of what we have by making extractions into the future where we're saying, well, based on this here, this is the most likely outcome. The most probable outcome will be this on these facts. That in itself is a testament to the quality and the certainty of the information that's been...
Well, you know, and it's coming from... Most of it is coming from having had this next phase of books to be read. Now, of course, not all of our books are perfect. Somebody pointed out to me that my... And I've got to get in touch with somebody who has a complete book on the Rothschild Money Trust. Some of the translations and some of the text has been corrupted. It's not clean. Now that means that I got to get a better copy. I've got to get a more complete version of that book. Similar things have happened with other copies and books that I've had that we had to fix over time. But when you take a look at books like Synagogue of Satan with Andrew Hitchcock, who's been on the show many times, or Webster, or of course, you know, we can get into this guy Fagan or Dyke, or I mean, it goes on and on. Mullins and Pidcock and Fahey and Ramsey and, oh, Leese. They're unbelievable because each one of them, from a different perspective, tells the same story. And so once you've been through every one of these books, you get a very strong feel for what is this criminal organization's next move. You see what's happening around you. You've learned the facts. You know the lies. Now you know the history. It's not that hard anymore. It's becoming a very easy thing to do to predict the next move of these people. And this is the idea that I had right from the start when I started putting the historical information out. Now, granted, nobody says it better, Muhammad, than Ben Friedman. Nobody. And if you want to get somebody to understand this conspiracy best, start with Ben Friedman, because there's no more sincere delivery of this conspiracy than Friedman's talk at the Willard Hotel in Washington, D.C. in 1961. That is in itself the most powerful piece of proof that we've had over the last 100 years, because it's impossible to listen to that and think this guy's not telling you the straight story. Impossible. He was there during the criminal actions of Morgenthau and Brandeis and Baruch and the rest. He tells you exactly what's happened, and when you read the rest of the books in parallel to this, you're convinced immediately that we are in a mess that needs to be sorted out lickety-split. We got to get this thing done now. We have to take action immediately. What do you think?
Absolutely, Darryl. The most important thing now, we've got it as loud as we can. We've said not only are these a set of facts and a set of history, we've extrapolated them out. We've shown there is an MO, a modus operandi, a method of behavior of the other side. They've been doing it for such a long time, they're not able to change that MO. I suppose this is the same thing with serial killers. The reason why the police are always able to catch them is that they revert to type. They're not able each time they go out and kill some poor victim to change their approach. They do the same thing each time because they know it works. They stick with what works. These people stick with what works. You can recognize their MO, and once you've done that, you can see their hand in everything that they're behaving in, and it's very, very clear. What we need people to do now is to try and move it on a bit themselves, because the other side, now they've decided, Darryl, to go with this collapse, when they throw their weight behind it, it will accelerate. Yeah, they've resisted it for the moment, but now they're saying, oh, sod this for a game of soldiers, we're not going to be able to support this. The mathematics are almost, you know, we're 4 years, 5 years ahead of our schedule, but let's let the thing go. And in fact, not let it go, let's push it a bit harder. When that starts happening, it will accelerate enormously when they start pushing it.
Well, I thank you again. You know, we do these things. We do them because it's the right thing to do. I want to go on record as saying I do my best, ladies and gentlemen. You know, heaven knows I don't do this with many resources. To date, still haven't got another computer. I don't know whether I'll ever get one based upon having to come up with money when it comes down to having to put a couple of extra bags of rice in my cupboard. This is just a time in life here where everybody's got to start hunkering down and doing their best to get this word out. Support your own families, ladies and gentlemen. The love of a family and the support of that family is going to get you through these tough times like no other institution. The institution of the family is priority one for each one of you out there. And the priority two is to get this information into the hands of as many caring people as you can and take care of yourselves. So I'm going to thank you again, Mohammed, for being on the show. Thanks again, huh?
Yep. Thank you very much, Darryl, for having me back on.
Well, I appreciate it. And ladies and gentlemen, until the next time, this is Darryl Bradford-Smith telling you all, please be well and take care of yourselves and your families. Bye-bye now.
Fever in the morning, fever all the time.